This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Welcome. Today on this segment, we're going to be talking with Donna Anderson. She is very experienced in the world of personality disorders and their effects on relationships. And she's written the book Love Fraud. Her website is lovefraud.com. And it's a cautionary tale, if you will, to those out there who find themselves in relationships with sociopaths, individuals who don't seem to have the ability to recognize right from wrong, for the ability to not lie about things without any sort of shame, for those who don't seem to have empathy, for those who don't seem to have the ability to truly authentically love another person other than themselves. Sound like any of the cases that we're following? Just a little. So we're not going to dive into these specific cases here. We're going to talk more so about the psychological end of it and who these people are, how they become who they are. So I want to welcome her. Donna Anderson, welcome to the show. Donna, give us some of your story. How did you find yourself here writing about this and trying to help other people and educate them if they found themselves in these sort of situations?
Oh, yeah. So I married a sociopath. Of course, I didn't know it at the time, but I married a man who took $250,000 from me. He cheated with at least 6 different women during our 2.5-year relationship. He had a child with one of those women. And then 10 days after I left him, not 10 days after we divorced, 10 days after I left him, he married the mother of the child, which was the second time he committed bigamy. And yeah, so needless to say, when I started figuring out what was going on, because I didn't know until I left and started finding all this evidence, I was talking to my therapist. As you can imagine, I needed a little bit of therapy.
Yes.
And telling her, you know, he was doing this, he's doing that. And she said, he sounds like a sociopath. And I'm like, sociopath? What's that? So I started researching it and came across some information. And sure enough, it perfectly described my ex-husband's behavior. And from that point on, I realized that I had a story to tell. I had information that needed to get out there. And because of that, I launched lovefraud.com back in 2005. And since then, I've collected well over 10,000 cases of people involved with sociopaths.
Very interesting. And I'm excited to dive into this. I personally have my own experiences as well, but I'll avoid talking about a lot of those on the air. But I can understand very much what you had gone through. Let's talk about the labeling, first of all. We have, obviously, these are antisocial personality disorders. We hear often about narcissists. That seems to be the overused word of the week, or the year, or the decade, really. Then we have sociopath, psychopath, and there's borderline personality disorders, which is kind of a hodgepodge of all these different things. Tell me, when you narrow this down here to the word sociopath, what is that versus some of these other antisocial personality disorders that are out there that can be somewhat similar?
Right. The terminology is extremely confusing. And there's a lot of disagreement in the field among psychopathy researchers and personality disorder researchers. There's political disagreements among the researchers and the therapist. And so it's no wonder the rest of us are confused, because the experts can't settle on what these disorders are called.
Exactly.
Right. So actually, the term sociopath is no longer a clinical definition for anything. It is no longer an official diagnosis. However, when the term was coined back in 1930, it originally meant anything pathological in social relations. And that's exactly how I use the word now. At Love Fraud, I use the word sociopath as an umbrella term for all of these disorders.
Okay.
And it includes the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. They have the Cluster B personality disorders, which are antisocial, narcissistic, borderline, and histrionic personality disorders. Mm-hmm. And what these disorders, they're all described together in a group, and they're called the extravagant disorders, the dramatic disorders.
Yep.
And then there's psychopathy, which is the term that is used by most of the university researchers. And that's very similar, but not precisely the same as antisocial personality disorder. So, and then there's all this overlap among all the disorders. So yes, it gets very confusing. And the point is, as a society, we need to know that they're out there.
Yeah.
And what these folks have in common is that they do not have the ability to authentically love. You know, regardless of which of these disorders that they may have, and there are differences among them,
sure,
that's what the bottom line is. They do not have the ability to authentically love, and consequently, they are impaired in their social relationships.
Now, this kind of comes back to when we look at the not having the ability to authentically love. We can argue it back and forth, but when we look at it, is this something that comes as a direct result of their upbringing, of nurture, or is this more in their DNA and nature, and they're missing something that just doesn't compute?
The research now shows that several of the conditions are highly genetic, and this is specific to psychopathy and antisocial personality disorder. What the understanding is now is that children can be born with a genetic predisposition to these disorders. And then after that, it depends on their upbringing and parenting. Now, the problem, of course, is that if a child inherits a genetic predisposition, usually it means that one or more of the parents is disordered, not always, but often. And sociopaths make terrible parents. Yeah. So what happens is that the child can inherit the genetic predisposition and then get the terrible parenting. And, you know, pretty soon you've got a little mini-me sociopath.
Yeah.
It is also possible that the child can get such a heavy dose. It's called like a genetic insult that no matter how good their parenting, it can't be overcome. In fact, I just posted a story on my website yesterday that I received from a reader who admits that she has two sociopathic children. And she herself is a clinical social worker. So she's like, she's a parenting expert. She says, I raised these kids right. I know how to do it. And there's nothing that I could do to overcome their genetic predisposition. So yeah, it is possible for somebody essentially to be born bad, like that old movie, The Bad Seed. It can happen.
Yeah, it can just go out there. And half the time it's, we can look back and examine this and say, well, yes, you had parents that were like this, and this is the genetic predisposition, but that's far after the fact, usually, when we're able to look at these things, and they've already grown, and they're already doing their own things, and you technically can't diagnose someone under the age of 18 with one of these disorders. I personally kind of disagree with that, because I think there's so many times where these things start to show themselves at younger ages, and it's not like they're going to magically go away or suddenly appear at the age of 18. I wonder if there was more ways of identifying these things in younger people and not just, well, we can't call it that. It seems like there's an obsession here with labeling and not so much going in and taking care of the problems, the symptomatic problems that people are exhibiting at younger ages. Is that something where if there was more attention, could we steer people away from being these extremely damaged and dysfunctional adults?
Well, there are plenty of researchers who are working on that. And there's a whole branch of the psychopathy research that does focus on young children. And this is one of the problems with the DSM-5 in the definition of antisocial personality disorder. And it says that you can't diagnose someone until they're 18. But it also says that they have to have a previous diagnosis of conduct disorder, which essentially is sociopathy for children.
Yeah, exactly.
So there is an understanding that what they have found is that young children who have the possibility of becoming disordered tend to exhibit what's called callous and unemotional traits. And what that means is that, you know, they don't have feelings. They don't experience empathy. They lie. They don't care how their behavior affects other people. And this can be seen in very young children. In fact, I've had parents tell me that they knew something was wrong with their kids, you know, when they're 3 and 4 years old.
Yep.
And so, yes, it is certainly possible that children can be diagnosed not with antisocial personality disorder, but possibly with conduct disorder. There are a couple of childhood versions of essentially this same disorder.
Yep.
And there are efforts underway to find ways to help children and to do exactly that, to direct them, you know, so that they don't become full-fledged psychopaths. And what needs to happen for that is essentially they need to be taught how to love, because this wasn't what they were born with. They weren't born with a natural desire to be around their mothers. They tend to be fearless. They run and jump in the lake by themselves when they're 3 years old or something like that. So this is exactly what needs to be cultivated in the kids, because they aren't born with this natural ability.
It's interesting, and I think that's a key part of this whole thing is taking a look at the childhood end of it. But let's talk about the adult end of it. Let's talk about, you know, once the damage has been done, essentially, and they're free range people now. They're adults. They're out there in the world, and the rest of us get to interact with them. Tell me about what these people are like, just in general. When you're out in public, you meet somebody. There's not like a big red flag usually over their head that says run.
Right. You do need to understand that they are not all the same. You know,
yes.
There's a wide range of behaviors. You know, we're talking about multiple disorders here.
Yes.
And there's a range. Like, for example, for psychopathy, the psychopaths, typically one of the most prominent traits is that they tend to be charismatic and charming. And but that's not all the time. I've had plenty of people who realized that they were involved with someone who was totally disordered, who had no charisma at all.
Uh-huh.
I have a book called Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
And I do talk about the typical warning signs that you see, one of which, as I said, is charisma and charm. Another of which is love bombing. Romantic relationships, they tend to shower you with attention and affection and tell you how wonderful you are. Another thing that happens is that what I call the sudden soulmate. You know, you meet this person and you think that it's the person you've been waiting for all your life. And the reason for that is because the person has been studying you, figured out what you want, and then turned himself into that person. So there's a whole range of traits that you typically see. And it's important to understand that you kind of need to see the whole picture, because if you meet someone who's, you know, charming and thinks you're wonderful, well, that's not necessarily bad, you know. But if you see someone who's also lying all the time, or who also doesn't take blame for anything and has a Jekyll and Hyde personality, if you start to see this whole picture, then you need to be careful.
Sure. I mean, there's certainly the relationships where someone, you know, you're in love and you want to be that person for the other person, and you compromise and things like that. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about that on top of all of these other things, the lies, the behavior that goes beyond just, I want to please the other person. When you have somebody that is doing that sort of behavior, who essentially chameleons themselves to the other person, and the other person feels, oh my gosh, this is my soulmate, but this person really has just molded themselves into what the other person wants to hear and see. Is that always a conscious decision on their part? Is this sometimes just the only way that they know how to love? Is this what they think love is by being like that?
the basic misunderstanding or lack of ability with sociopaths is, as I said, they don't have the authentic ability to love. So here's what that means. Researchers have actually identified that there are three components of romantic love. The first is attachment, which is the desire to be around somebody special. The second is sex, which is hopefully self-explanatory. The third component is caregiving. And if you truly love someone, you want to take care of them. You want them to be happy and healthy. You want what is best for them. Sociopaths do not do caregiving. They only care only about themselves. They don't have the ability to put anybody else before them. And so this is the fundamental problem. They cannot take care of other people. They can't, even their own children. Yeah, you know, they look at their children as trophies or little mini-me's. They're not really concerned about how the kids grow and develop. So this is what's missing. Now, the rest of it is kind of window dressing, you know, because, yeah, they can act in a certain way. And the thing to understand is that when you meet someone who is disordered, a sociopath, they can keep the charade going for a long time. They can keep it going for as long as it takes in order to get someone to sign the dotted line. I mean, often it's a whirlwind romance. You know, they're moving quickly to, you know, try and get you hooked before you escape. But I've heard of people who dated for years and, you know, the person was perfect and, you know, behavior was consistent. And as soon as they married, like on the wedding night, they changed into another person. So that is possible.
Like they knew that they could just finally let the veil down or just I can. In their minds, I can be me. I'm thinking exactly. Is probably what goes through their mind.
I've heard of cases of them saying that. You know, one woman told me that her husband said, "I'm married now. I can stop pretending."
Oh my God! and to them, it probably doesn't register as that's 100% not healthy or normal behavior. To them, that's like, oh, this is just how it works. It seems in some of them. With your specific situation, and it seems a lot of these, they almost kind of follow like the same guidebook, depending on the type of personality we're talking about. I've had personal dealings with borderline, that it was, oh my gosh, just one of the craziest things I've ever gone through in my life, seeing someone's true self kind of come out. With you, what were some of the early warning signs? Were there early warning signs that when you look back on, yes, of course, it's easier to see them, but, you know, maybe they were there and you didn't see them at first, but they were there.
Well, my husband was definitely charismatic and charming. He swept me off my feet in a whirlwind romance. He promised me the world. He showered me with attention. He told me I was the woman he was waiting for all his life. And, you know, so this was that fit the profile. This is exactly what a lot of them do. The bad parts were that he started suggesting that I invest in his businesses very quickly. But at the time, you know, he had already proposed marriage to me. And it was talking about this wonderful future that we had as entrepreneurs. And I didn't realize that it was that he was essentially taking my money. He never put it that way. He never said, oh, give me some money so I can go see some other women or something along those lines. It was always, you know, we're working on our future together. And so looking back, you know, the warning signs were, you know, the whirlwind romance, the charisma and charm, the love bombing. And, you know, at the time there was no information available on this. And I had no idea that these were red flags.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
There is more to come with Donna. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss our second part of our conversation. It's going to be coming up here on the feed shortly. So don't miss that. You get a commercial-free version of the show if you sign up through Apple Podcasts. Even try it for 3 days free. So do check that out. We do greatly appreciate your support. I'm Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter at TonyBPod. Lots more to come. Stay with us.